Yo, Frank Zagana, Frank 052, who just tweeted us.
Yeah.
Why didn't anyone pick the theme song to The Incredible Hulk? Well, listen, they call it a top 10 for a reason. And if you're number 11, you're not going to get in. That's just the way it works, Frank. I'm sorry.
Here's the reason I didn't pick The Incredible Hulk, because it was on my list and I thought about it. But I wasn't sure if people would know if you meant like the, you know, the serious theme, the dun, 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 or the beginning one. I wasn't sure if people would know which one we were talking about, because that opening theme with the piano where you see him turn into the Hulk, you learn about the backstory with the experimentation. That's actually pretty good. That's actually really good.
But I
didn't know if the voters would quite know what I was referring to. So that's personally why Flash I did Gordon. Not go. Everyone knows that.
But you picked Flash Gordon.
Everyone knows.
I don't know.
You don't think people don't remember the Queen song? That was a big hit.
I think there's an age demographic that might miss that.
There's an age demographic on that one.
I don't know about that. I mean, if you're worried about the age demographic, Greatest American Hero, I mean, that's right around the exact same time. Yeah, this is the serious Hulk.
This is so sad.
It really is.
Keep playing it, please. Here's Andy Kamenetsky walking into the strip club. Sits down with his friends. Excuse me. Can I see a manager, please?
I did not ask to see a damn manager. She brought over her manager. I did not ask
You're
to
supposed
see
to squash
anybody.
That, man. This is the Andy K. I want to see a manager theme music right here.
It might have been the theme music the Dodgers were hearing going back to the dugout yesterday.
Yeah.
A whole
lot of sad Bruce Banner walking. Dodgers yesterday lose 3-1 to the Giants at the Ravine. They split a four-game series. Opened it hot, LZ. 17 runs over the first two games, but then bats started going a little colder. Alex Wood gets rocked on Saturday. And you're looking at a situation where, obviously, it's way too early to panic. But it is a lost opportunity. And unless the Giants turn out to be way better than we thought they were, this is a lost opportunity in a 60-game season.
It is. I mean, for a couple of reasons. One, it's our rival, right? You just want to smash the rival every single opportunity you get. Splitting a series season with them really, or splitting this series with them really feels like a loss, if I'm being quite honest with you. Even at 3-1, I would have been okay. I really wanted a sweep. I wanted a sweep because look at our team. Look at the squad.
It's stacked.
This is a squad. It's stacked. We should never, ever, ever be splitting a season series or an opening series or any kind of series with a squad like the Giants. Because
they don't look good,
unstacked.
Man. They do not look good.
No, they don't look good. There were points on Friday when some broadcasters were wondering if they knew where they should be standing in the outfield. Yep. Like, it was embarrassing those first two games.
They're a socially conscious squad, but they don't look like they're actually good. You know, we'll give them credit. Yeah. You know, they're down for the cause, but they don't look like they're actually particularly good at baseball.
Well, they're good enough to split a season series. They're good enough to be on a two-game win streak within two against one of the favorites to win the World Series. So I'm going to pause on me dumping on them now. We just underperformed. And we underperformed. I think Saturday's game was a byproduct of trying to make something out of nothing. You know, like instead of getting what was presented, I felt like the guys were pressing because the runs were coming so easy before. And then, you know, yesterday, the bullpen just shut down all the bats. And when that happened, I was just sort of like, that's what a bullpen is supposed to do. I just didn't think theirs was that good to do it that well, right? Like, I didn't think that they would just shut down this high-powered offense. And so now that we've had these two little hiccups in the season, my bold prediction of 45 wins is definitely in danger. But then also, I'm just curious as to, you know, how we want to handle this upcoming series, because one, we have a losing streak heading into it, and then two, cheat us.
Cheaters. Going to Houston. Two-game series beginning tomorrow against the hated Astros. Hated. Speaking, by the way, LZ, of opportunities, Justin Verlander, who was slated to pitch on Wednesday, he is going to be out potentially for the season, definitely for a while, absolutely on Wednesday. The Dodgers have an opportunity in front of them. And, you know, if you want to try to get yourself back on the pace where you can make LZ look like Nostradamus, you win both of these games. You win both of these games and you take back that pace, especially if you end up missing that Wednesday start against Verlander. Like, again, that is a real opportunity in front of you. You got to take it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take it.
Absolutely. And you know, yes, take it. Yes, take it. I mean, it's so weird because, like, you know, the plans that we had, they were originally to properly deal with them. It's like I was going to go down to Anaheim and boo them because they were supposed to open up against the Angels. And I was looking forward to booing them there. I was looking forward to booing them here. I was looking forward to booing them everywhere. And now it's like I'm hoping the cardboard boxes boo them, but it's in Houston, so they're not going to boo. Like it, all the thunder of rage has been taken out. And so all I have left now is the hope that they just get back on track in terms of wins and losses, which is important, but not nearly as important as taking the opportunity to boo the hell out of the cheaters every opportunity that I had. I mean, how freaking fortunate are they? They don't get punished. They get to keep the ring. And now they don't even get to really be punished by the league because it's only a 60-game series. And if you're the Florida Marlins, you can't even keep it for 60 games because you can't keep the Rona down. Like, no, dude. They have gotten so lucky to go out and hire Dusty Baker to give them cover, a nice, respected black man at the height during the Black Lives Matter, so he really can't say anything about them. I mean, it's just like, what the hell, man? Why can't I get revenge against this squad? I can't boo them. They can't be booed. And now our team is going to go visit them. And instead of coming in like a roar, we're coming in with like a little bit of a licking of a wound sort of thing. And I would hate to split that season series because then I'm just like, what the hell, what the hell, what the hell?
How much of that bad blood do you think is going to carry over in this game? Like, I mean, there's not going to be the fans. And you know, the Dodgers wouldn't have been getting – or the Astros, I should say, weren't going to be getting booed in their own building. Like, that's going to wait till September. That's when the Astros actually visit the Ravine. And, you know, who knows if by then you'll be able to have, say, 25% capacity or any type of fans inside Dodger Stadium. My guess is we won't. But, you know, you try to remain optimistic. But for the time being, this wasn't going to be a hostile environment for the Astros anyway. But how much do you expect that emotion to actually carry over in the game itself? Like, are any Astros getting plunked? You expect anybody to be getting hit or even just one hit? Just something to let them know, you know what, we remember. We're still mad about this.
I mean, listen, I'm going to keep it up. I'm going to keep it up. And I'm pretty sure there are a lot of fans that are going to keep it up. But I'm going to assume I've never been a professional athlete that's had my championship stolen from me by cheaters. But I'm going to assume that it's the sort of thing that you think about on the way to. And it's the sort of thing you think about on the way out. But during the actual games, especially, you know, for pitchers, you can't spend a great deal of time getting angry because that may throw you off your overall game. And if you're a batter, you can't really spend too much time being angry and focused in on wanting to destroy somebody because that may have you swinging at pitches that you shouldn't be swinging at. You may be taking chances for things you shouldn't be taking chances for, because you're so desperate to beat the snot out of this guy, out of this team, because they did you wrong. So I'm going to assume that they're managing their emotions and they're going to keep it isolated to going to Houston and leaving Houston and not so much while they're in Houston because you can throw everything off. But as a fan, oh, I can hold a grudge, man. Ooh, I can hold a grudge. As you guys know, I've never purchased and have never worn a pair of Jordans. Because like MJ, I too can hold on to stuff longer than I should. And yeah. It's not healthy. I'll admit it. It's not healthy. Am I embarrassed though? Nope.
Nope.
Because fan is short for fanatic, and you need to be a fanatic. And I know people who are diehard Dodger fans, when they heard that the Houston Astros cheated us, the last thing they were thinking about was moving on.
Look, man.
Oh, no.
Look, sports fandom is one of those places where it's okay to be petty. You are encouraged to be petty. It's fine. And in the case with the Dodgers, it's not even pettiness. Like, this is, I mean, look at somebody like Clayton Kershaw. Look at the narrative that is still part of Kershaw's career where he chokes when it matters the most. Clayton Kershaw cannot deliver when the game is on the line. He's one of the greatest to ever pitch in baseball history, arguably the greatest pitcher in Dodger history. The Dodgers, by the way, a franchise steeped in great pitchers. But this is part of Kershaw's legacy. Think how much everything changes for Kershaw if they win that World Series. Like, even if Kershaw doesn't pitch well in the World Series, but the Dodgers win it anyway, that all changes and goes away for Kershaw with one ring. And, like, you know, this is one of the all-time great careers. And all of us have been at times guilty, on piling on Kershaw. We've all been a part of this. You know, and in the case of the Astros,
some of us ran over his jersey.
Yes, some of us did. Some of us probably look back on that with a little bit of regret.
some of us.
I would like to think, look back on that and think, not my best moment. Not the best moment I ever had.
Some of us may have had some second thoughts afterwards. Some of us may have apologized to the pitcher. Some of us may have regretted posting the video of the car running over the jersey. Some of us may have had to, you know, go back and say, Mr. Kershaw, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that to you. Some of us, not all of us, but some.
Did you actually apologize? Like, did you actually say to him, yeah, look, I, what's his reaction?
Did you show him the video?
Reaction? Absolutely.
Not just the apology, but you having to break down the reason I'm apologizing is because as a 40 something old grown ass man, I ran over your jersey. Like, wait, what's he thinking to you? Is he like, what the hell is wrong with you? And by the way, oh, I also happen to double as a journalist, and I ran over your jersey.
So I explained to him that I thought it was unfair for me to have done that to him on my platform, and that I was an emotionally upset fan. And I explained to him that I have been a Dodger fan, you know, before you were even on the team, and that I just did that out of frustration. And I was really, really sorry because I didn't mean to hurt you in that way, because I didn't expect the video to go viral the way that it did. You know, I don't know what I expected. You know, when you have a large platform or a medium-sized platform or however you want to describe the platform that I have, you do need to be careful because things can snowball very quickly. But I was pissed, man. I was pissed. And I don't regret being pissed. I regret posting the video for sure, but I don't regret the emotions that I felt, man. You have to remember, I was at a very important meeting before the game, and I had to speed through the city to get to Dodger Stadium. And you know what happens when you get to the stadium and you get there late? You're parking way the hell out there. So that means not only did I park the way the hell out there, then I had to run to the freaking stadium because I didn't want to miss too many words. And then I had to spend God knows how much. I think I might have dropped $600 on this ticket because it was last minute StubHub third party mess. So I spent all this money, sped, ran, get to the seat, and I won't forget this. The people assumed that the seat that was for me was empty, and so they had put all their stuff in my seat. And so I get to the freaking stadium. The background's important, man. So I get to the freaking stadium, and I'm looking at the people, and I'm like, oh, excuse me, are these your things? And the woman looks at me and says, yes. And I said, well, this is my seat. And we had a stare-off.
Did you call him in?
Stare-off.
LZ, did you call the manager?
No, I didn't call the manager because I know better than calling the manager. No, no, no. I handled my business the way I was supposed to.
Well, so but look, then the husband that, showed, if that guy listen, though walked, the if husband that guy walked over up, and slept in your lap, it would have been a little different.
Well, it would have been a lot different for a lot of reasons. Then her husband shows up. And so then it's the family, and then there's a little boy too, right? So I have to be careful because I don't wanna have to embarrass his dad because this is gonna scar the boy for life. He may not be a Dodger fan after that. So I just said politely, hey, you know, is it possible that you could move your things out of the seat? Here's my ticket, even though I don't need to show you my ticket. I gave him the courtesy, here's my ticket, blah, 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 blah. And they did move their things. But it was tense for a second. It was definitely tense for a second. So all that to say, I went through a lot to get there. A lot to get there. And for you to blow that lead, I was pissed. So I ran over to Jersey, and I was emotional, and I was upset. But I have apologized. It came from the heart. I believe he accepted it. He's a better man than I am. And, yeah, that's what happened.
Oh, okay. All right. Look, you're a stand-up. You told Kershaw that you did him wrong. In fairness, you also, too, had a long walk back to your car where all of this is getting and more mad. Like, probably would have helped if you could have gotten your car right away to cool down. So it's a lot there going on. So, again, not your finest moment. Not a moment you looked
back
with pride. But you were stand-up apologized. That's the right thing to do. All right. Coming up, the Lakers had a scrimmage against the Magic over the weekend. A little bit of health concerns coming out of it, but also perhaps some optimism for Kyle Kuzma. Talk about that coming up next. Lakers got their final scrimmage of the Orlando bubble before they open the regular season on Thursday against the, at minimum, Lou Williams-less Clippers. Who knows who else the Clippers won't have, but we know they will not have Lou Williams because he is going to be in a 10-day quarantine because he decided to visit the old Magic City for some lemon peppers while he was on an excused absence from the bubble. But the Lakers play the Wizards today. That's a noon tip local time. And on Saturday, they had their second scrimmage. They won 119-112. Bit of an issue, blew a huge lead that they had to fight to maintain because they played three quarters without Anthony Davis. He got poked in the eye, didn't play the remainder of the game. He's officially considered day-to-day, and it doesn't seem like they are super worried about it, LZ, but you do see the difference of how they look with Anthony Davis versus without. Spoiler alert, way better with. He had almost a double-double in the first quarter. In the first quarter, he almost had a double-double. He played really well. But Kyle Kuzma had a much better game and then he did in the opener where he was quite frankly a mess. 25 points on 10 of 13 shooting, much better shot selection, wasn't forcing the action, wasn't wild, 4-4 from behind the arc in the first quarter. And as is always the case with Kuzma, the question becomes, what's next? Is this the beginning of something or is this just more of the up and down and the lack of consistency that we've seen with Kuzma?
Well, everyone from Trudell down have been talking about how well Kuz had been performing during the, you know, practice and during the scrimmages they had as a team. You know, a lot of compliments about how he's just shooting the ball so well. And so, you know, out the gate, you know, maybe he still felt like he was in that space. And he took, I believe, 13 shots that first scrimmage. Didn't shoot the ball particularly well. Forced a lot of things, as you mentioned. But because he thought he was cooking still. And, you know, maybe he was doing some heat checking. Or this could be a situation where his girlfriend wishes him a happy birthday, flies a banner overhead.
Winnie Harlow.
Realizes he's got a ball out in order to validate all this excitement about him turning 25. And so he did just that. He balled out. I don't care what the rationale is. I'm just happy for him because it was good to see him go out there and look like the guy that we had seen his first couple of years in the league. A guy who would get cooking. And it's no coincidence, you mentioned Anthony Davis being out. It's no coincidence, once again, when Kuz has an opportunity to be the second guy, he thrives. I mean, it's no coincidence.
No, it likely is not a coincidence.
Whenever he's number two and he knows he's getting plenty of touches, he's just a different offensive player. And I don't know if he's ever going to be able to be the guy who can be the number three and just be ready to go during the few opportunities. But when he gets plenty of opportunities, he gives you plenty of return of investment. And I don't know what Frank Vogel is going to do. I don't know how LeBron can help. I don't know what Kuz can do. But this is just yet another example, Andy, of Kuz is nice. He's nice. It's just that it's hard for him to show you who he is if he's not able to have the same number of touches as he did the first couple of years in which he was in the league.
Well, here's one of the things he can do to help himself, because it's interesting. Both of these games, he put up 13 shots. And the first one, he was absolutely wild and forcing the issue. This one, it wasn't even just that he hit 10 of those 13. It's the quality of shots that he was taking. And also, I think the quality of the shots that he was looking for. Like, it's one thing to look for your shot, and Kuzma should look for a shot. He's a scorer. It's another thing to be hunting for shots. And in game one, he was hunting for those shots. You saw in this game, Kuzma did very little off the dribble, or like off the dribble excessively. He wasn't trying to do too much. He had a lot of shots that were just in rhythm, either like one dribble pull up or catch and shoot, stuff like that. He wasn't trying too hard to make things happen. And I think that's in part why a lot of these shots went down, is this, they were just better shots, period. And then he got himself a rhythm going and got a confidence. There was also too a great moment in the second half where Kuzma had the ball at like sort of the upper curve of the three-point arc. And he could have been looking to create a one-on-one matchup, but he spotted KCP wide open cross-court. He made
in the corner.
Beautiful. I mean, just beautiful pinpoint pass. Set up KCP for a wide open three. Like, those are the type of moments, too, that they need from Kuzma. Like, especially with Rondo not available and Dion Waiters still not quite knowing his teammates, they don't have a lot of guys in the second unit who can theoretically help other guys get their shots. Kuzma's always talked about wanting to be that guy. But this year, as a playmaker, I think he took a step backwards. And whether, again, that's the presence of LeBron combined with AD and, you know, not seeing those opportunities there. But that's the kind of stuff that they're going to be looking for Kuzma as well. It's not just the scoring. It's how good of a player can you be?
Yeah. And that's the hallmark of a good, if not championship caliber team. That when your top guys aren't just looking to eat, but they're looking to cook and share the food with others. And, you know, a lot of people, when they look at Kuz, they question whether or not he has that sort of playmaking ability for others. We know Zoe did. We certainly know that Brandon Ingram did. Brandon Ingram can certainly set up shots for others.
Oh, absolutely.
Kuz was always the guy who was the beneficiary of those passes, of being with a playmaker. But now he's at the stage of his career, and you talked about this last week, where you're no longer going on the assumption of, you know, you have a lot of runway because you're found money.
Yeah.
You're no longer found money.
No, it's no
now
longer
you're
cute.
In the budget.
It's no longer Kyle Kuz was no longer cute. Yeah.
Right.
It's no longer a cute story.
And we're expecting you to hit certain markers for us. We need certain things from you because you're part of the plan. You're not a discovery. It's like Cody Bellinger. First year, Cody Bellinger was found money. Oh, my God, look at this kid go. This is amazing. Year two, yo, dog, this is what we need from you.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you're a good player that shows flashes of possible greatness. Kuz is struggling as a third wheel because he wants – second wheel shot opportunities. And what he's getting are third wheel player opportunities. Player opportunities.
Yeah.
Chris Bosh came to Miami as a made man, multi-time all-star, all-NBA performer. He could ball out. The biggest play maybe of his career was an offensive rebounding pass.
Yeah.
That's, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, that's where he needs to be thinking about. That's what he needs to be thinking about, is that when you're in that particular role, your impact on the game may not come from a shot. It may not even come from the offensive end of the ball. You have to be a player. More than a scorer, you have to be a complete player. And we saw elements of that when that game in the scrimmage against Orlando.
No, another example like that, you know, Kevin Love, he had to make that same type of adjustment with LeBron and Kyrie Irving and the Cavaliers. The moment that I remember most of Kevin Love during those runs to the finals.
Top of the key.
Yep. Switched on Steph. And he held his own against Steph. Like, those are the type of moments. And in the case of Kevin Love there, nothing will show up in the stat sheet at all. Like, if you were not watching that game, you will have no idea that ever happened. Like, at least Bosch got the assist. You will have no idea this happened with Kevin Love at all. But it was important. It was pivotal. And those are the type of moments that, and, you know, that's a type of player that Kyle Kuzma is going to need to try to be if he's really going to be everything that they want on this playoff run and hopefully towards a championship. Coming up next, talk a little NFL with Diane Rossini, NFL insider for ESPN 710. Looking to track down Diana Rossini, ESPN NFL insider, to talk a little bit about what they're going to try to do to keep the league safe, LZ. We're looking right now at the situation with baseball, and the Marlins have a legitimate outbreak, COVID outbreak on the team right now, per Jeff Passan. 8 more players and 2 coaches with Miami Marlins have tested positive for COVID-19, and as an outbreak has spread throughout their clubhouse, brought the total cases in recent days to at least 14. Sources tell him and Jesse Rogers from ESPN. And we just saw reports of the potential restrictions that could be there for NFL players throughout the course of the season, places they're allowed to go, places they're not allowed to go, the potential fines. That stuff's going to be
necessary. Is Magic City on the list?
Magic City. It's not specifically on the list, but I believe it's understood.
No, you got to be specific. I'm going to need locations. I'm going to need addresses. You got to be specific. Otherwise, I'm going to get my lawyer and I'm going to find some wiggle room.
Well,
Magic City could easily be classified as a restaurant. And
well,
you'd be hard-pressed to prove that it's not.
Well, you know what? We can get into the particulars of these rules and restrictions with Diana Rossini. Covers all things NFL for ESPN, NFL Insider. How are you, Diana?
Hi, guys. I'm all right. I'm actually, like, a little blah because my morning started talking about strip clubs and chicken wings, and I was all excited hearing about it on Sports Talk Radio, and then it, like, quickly got serious with all this Marlins news and COVID, obviously. So it could be better, but, you know, we're all getting through this together, right?
We can do both. There's no reason we can't do both.
I was going to say, we're going to combine it, right? We're going to combine it. In the new layout for the NFL, as Magic City specifically listed as a no-go zone, because as far as I'm concerned, it's a restaurant with entertainment. It's not a strip club.
Correct. So, well, here's the thing. I've been it's kind of funny. If you look at my Google searches from last night, you would think I have some strange habit myself.
No judgment here, actually, Diana. No judgment whatsoever.
So I was a sports anchor in D.C., and you guys have been to that city before, and it is a very normal thing to hang out at strip clubs down there. And when I was in college, that's when I learned about it because I went to college in that area. And I remember when I met Jamel Hill for the first time, we, like, bonded over, like, our favorite strip club spots in D.C., not for the entertainment, not for the for the legs and thighs, but more for the food. So, like, this wasn't a wild thing when I heard this in terms of, you know, Lou Williams loving the food there. But that being said,
by the way, Secrets was my spot, by the way, Diana. Just so you know, Secrets was my spot in D.C.
Secrets, yours. I was more of a Camelot kind of gal.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good spot. That's a good spot.
Yeah, it's low-key, quiet. In fact, one of my colleagues at NBC4 in D.C., he was the one who, like, showed me, said, if you want good steak in town, this is where you go. And I was like, But okay. But it worked out. And to this day, whenever I go to DC, I go to, I stop by. I did fall down this wormhole of how this is working, and strip clubs are operating a lot like takeout restaurants right now. So while you wait for your food, there is some entertainment that is there. You can't go up and actually do the things that we've seen people do before. There's one strip club in Houston that's a drive-through right now where you can drive up while you wait for your food. You can't. It's like unbelievable. So, yeah, but that will be on the list. Like, you know, if there are strip clubs that are open in certain cities, they cannot go and sit down in there, nor can they do that in bars and clubs, which – I mean, that is going to be a tough challenge. Knowing some of the big cities that like to party, places where I've run into players, seen them out when and during the season, nights before games, I think this is going to be a tough task. But I think this is always going to go back to how serious is everyone in wanting to play in the season, with the exception of the whole Lou Will thing. You know, I feel like NBA guys right now, they get it, and they're all in, and they kind of have no choice being stuck in that bubble.
Well, that's actually what I was going to ask you, yeah. Danny. We're talking with Diana Rossini, ESPN NFL insider. How well do you – if what we're hearing right now per this memo that, you know, for example, you can't go to an indoor nightclub with more than 15 people, an indoor bar with more than 15 people other than to pick up food, concert with more than 15. These are basically just can't go anywhere. You really are not going to be able to go just about anywhere. You can't even go to an indoor religious service with more than 25% capacity, according to this memo. How do you expect players to react to this?
Well, they've already reacted. And you know, they're going to tell you when they're on the record that they're going to abide by this. But I don't think that there is a lot of belief that everyone will. You know, I think the veteran players that have families, they have the awareness to make sure that they're going to be safe about this. But it's really the younger players that I worry about when I look at situations like this. That's going to take maturity and discipline, especially guys that are new to
the game. Lou Will is 33 years old.
Yeah,
he's 33 years old.
He's old enough to know better. He is old enough to know better.
He wanted chicken wings. You guys are being judgy. I don't think Lou is really out there like trying to check the kicks out. I think he really was just getting food, but he should have known.
No, he has his own wings on the menu.
Zion leaves for funerals. He didn't go to any, you know, restaurants or strip clubs, or at least he stayed out of the news. We don't know what Zion did. And that's another thing, too. You know, so much of this is how much is just being exposed, how much we just don't know in terms of what people are doing. But look at what's happening with the Marlins now. One person get it, and this thing just spreads like wildfire. People making the wrong decisions, or players making the wrong decisions, coaches making, you know, coaches doing this, it could result, you know, in ruining the entire season for a team. Because this season, guys, is not about who the best team is. It's about who can stay the healthiest.
Yes, and to your point, Ken Rosenthal just tweeted out moments ago, quote, tonight's Yankees-Phillies game is canceled. Sources tell The Athletic. So he doesn't mention COVID specifically in his tweet, but based upon the news coming out of Florida with the game against the Orioles, you can assume, I think it's a safe assumption, that the Yankees, Phillies are also being impacted by a possible outbreak, maybe. You know, we'll see, not quite sure why the game is being canceled, but to your point, Diana, the game is being canceled. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about the big trade that just happened.
Really quickly there, though, like that, uh-huh. Even if it's not specifically COVID-related, meaning that nobody from Philly tested positive, the Yankees have to be in the visiting locker room of the Marlins. I don't know about you guys. I would not want to be around there. I would not want to be exposed to that at all. Why even take that risk? So that makes sense even if it's for them being, you know, precautionary, it's probably the smartest thing for them to do. Because imagine what would happen if the Yankees came in, or, you know, the Yankees are in town, they use the Marlins dugout, and then they all get it. I mean, baseball's over then.
Right. No, you're absolutely correct. So switching gears a little bit and talking about the big trade that just happened, because it directly impacts you know, our division with the Rams, which was already, you know, arguably the best division in baseball. How good is Adams? And better yet, how good are now the Seattle Seahawks now that they've given up the farm for him?
So I live about 10 minutes from the Jets facility. So I'm in Jets Giants land. And you don't need to live near the facility to know how darn good Jamal Adams is. He's at least a top three best defensive player in the league. He's a Swiss Army knife that can do it all. And that's why Seattle signed him. It's not for Jamal to just play safety. He can do everything. And when you're playing in a division with the Rams, with the brilliance of a Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, with players like George Kittle, offenses that need to be stopped because they're just that talented, you bring a guy in Jamal Adams, and he's a game changer. You know, we could probably debate all day, is he the key to them becoming contenders in the NFC? How far can they take? How far could he specifically take Seattle? I think he's an incredible addition. I think they immediately get better. I think this is the closest to the return of the Legion of Boom with the addition of Jamal. I just don't see it as being the home run, though. The piece that this team needs with Russell Wilson getting older, the offensive line struggling the last few seasons. I don't think that this is it, but it's obvious Seattle is in we are trying to win now mode based on basically getting fleeced by the Jets here and giving up as much as they did for a player that was absolutely miserable playing in New York.
Diana Russini, ESPN NFL insider. Appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Watch out for those wings.
Look, we've established food at these gentlemen's clubs. They've come a long way, and perhaps Magic City, which I just saw, there's an oral history of it that I've been going through, very illuminating. Maybe Magic City set the tone for improving the menus at all these different clubs across the country. Coming up next, Take It or Shake It. All right, LZ, it was not just the Dodgers struggling on Sunday. The Angels had the debut of Shohei Ohtani on the mound, and it was very much grand opening, grand closing. Did not record an out. He walked three batters, gave up three singles, five earned runs against the Athletics. Shohei Ohtani was the Rookie of the Year in 2018 as a two-way player, but has not been able to maintain it since. This was his first action on the mound since 2018. Take it or shake it, the return of two-way player Shohei Ohtani.
Take it or shake it.
Yeah, the return of a two-way player Shohei Ohtani this season.
I'm going to take it.
I'll take it.
I'm going to take it because I guess he hasn't recorded an out since 2018. So that can't
be good. No, he has not. No.
However, if you take away the two-way player part, and you just look at the fact that a pitcher coming off of a season-ending surgery didn't have a great first start, you wouldn't freak out and you wouldn't panic. So separate the two-way part and just look at the bare bones. A pitcher coming back from an injury didn't have the best of starts. Didn't get absolutely destroyed, but didn't have the best of starts.
No, he got pretty destroyed. You don't record one out. Destroyed. You don't record one out.
Yeah, but what was the score?
Don't have it in front of me.
I'm like, okay, listen.
The score was they lost.
No, it wasn't. It was
check the ticker. Check the ticker.
I'm looking.
No, I remember it wasn't that bad. I just can't remember the exact number. I don't want to give the bad number.
Bad the number that hit.
You're supposed to be taking it or shaking it.
6-4.
You're supposed
to be taking it. 6-4.
Yeah.
They lost 6-4.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, I mean,
all right. It was pretty bad.
You know what I'm saying? So, I'm not going to freak. I'm not going to freak all the hell. No. We beat teams 9-1, 8 pretty bad. 6-4, it's a loss.
All right. Speaking of pitches that did not go well, we saw Thursday night Dr. Fauci. Had a ceremonial first pitch that went way, way, way outside, but he now has a baseball card of his own. Topps created a Dr. Fauci baseball card. It's available just for 24 hours. He's wearing a mask, by the way, on the mound. We have not seen the final numbers on this card, but take it or shake it, it's going to turn out Dr. Fauci's card was a big seller.
Wait, what?
Will Dr. Fauci's card sell well? It was available for 24 hours.
I'm like, what? Is that really a thing?
Yes.
I want one.
I'm not making this up.
I'm going to take it.
Oh, take it.
I'm going to take it, I guess. I mean, I'm not going to rock with one. You know, I'd much rather you, you know, spend some time getting the vaccine. But, you know, a lot of people love him. A lot of people love, you know, his attitude. They love the fact that he's very pro-information. A lot of people love him for political reasons that I'm not going to get into. So there's all kinds of motivations why you may want to have one. So I'm going to take it. It just feels weird.
It is a little strange. I'm not going to lie. It feels kind of odd that he would get this. And it's interesting. You said all the reasons that people like Dr. Fauci, a lot of those reasons that you listed are the same reason that a lot of people don't like him. So he is to some degree polarizing. But either way, it was kind of fun that he ended up with a card. Next one, over the weekend, the Knicks announced their new head coach. It is one Tom Thibodeau. Take it or shake it, good hire for the Knicks.
Shake it. No on the Thibs. Shake up. That squad isn't what Tom does. Tom takes veteran guys and get them to max out. I don't think, based upon what I saw in Minnesota, he's really good at dealing with young guys who need to figure it out. His greatest success, obviously, was being a defensive coordinator for Boston. Them all grown folks over there, man. Them all grown folks who bought in, who didn't have to be cajoled, who didn't have to convince. I mean, they're being led by KG. So that was his greatest achievement. And then he goes to Chicago where, you know, he has an MVP in Derrick Rose. But the guys who are really doing all the work that Tom is really good at highlighting, once again, those are grown folks. You know, those were made men who bought into it, the Luol Dangs and blah, 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 blah. He gets to Minnesota, he's not able to replicate it because he has kids as leaders. And here I'm looking at Boston or New York, and I'm like going, I don't know, man. I don't know if Tom wants to deal with that. He wanted a job, and New York's a good job, and they're willing to pay, fine, whatever. But just based upon the history that I've witnessed, it isn't simply that he was trying to take on too much in Minnesota, trying to be both the team pres as well as the coach. Is that I also don't think his personality is geared towards young people who don't know what the hell they're doing out on the floor, and that's what the Knicks have plenty of right now.
Agree 100%. I think he is a really strange match for that organization. And it feels like the Knicks kind of trying to win the press conference, you know, with a guy who has a ring and he, you know, for a while at least was known as a defensive genius, you know, although now people are starting to wonder if his schemes have grown outdated in the modern NBA. But he it's the exact same reason that I don't know if you remember about maybe 5-6 years ago before the Lakers, I think it was before they hired Luke Walton. It was either Luke or Byron Scott, but Thibodeau's name had been mentioned. I'm like, man, he's an awful fit for a squad this young. I was like, I really hope the Lakers don't look to try to win the press conference that day because it's a bad fit. All right. We were talking before with Diana Russini about Jamal Adams, who's been traded to the Seattle Seahawks from the Jets, and he had asked for that trade, and he apparently had been unhappy. Le'Veon Bell, Jets running back, took a shot at Jamal Adams on Twitter because Adams had lobbied for Le'Veon to sign last year with the Jets. Quote, "People do all the hooting and hollering to get you brought in just to leave. LOL, like people weird, yo. The internet got those dudes doing whatever for attention. Even when they tell you bleep, they don't believe themselves." Take it or shake it, Le'Veon Bell has a right to be salty about Jamal Adams leaving.
Come on, man. Shake it.
Shake it, man.
Man, stop. Man, well, you got your money, okay? You took a year off doing whatever the hell you were doing, making music and all that stuff, and you forced yourself out of the Steelers and Don't be blaming Jamal Adams because you only had the Jets to turn to after your stunt that you pulled trying to get more money out of the Steelers. Don't be making this about Jamal. This was about you having regrets. You got, you know, Adam Gaze, crazy eye self looking at you, trying to come out some plays. You ain't winning. You're not quite sure about Sam Darnold. When you had a good situation with a great coach in Mike Tomlin who worked with you and all your quirks, you had a quarterback that had won Super Bowls and was unflappable, and you forced your way out, and you set out a year, and now you're in New York. Not even New York. You're in New Jersey. Be real. You're in Jersey, and you're in a bad situation, and now the best player just forced himself out, and you salty because he told you to stay. Man, listen, you made bad decisions. Don't be blaming Adams because he's got to eat too.
Dude, anybody who signs up for the Jets, it's one thing if you get traded there, but if you actually sign a contract with the Jets, I have no sympathy for you whatsoever in terms of how it ends up playing out. Everybody knows that organization is a dysfunctional mess. If that's
to say
what
the least.
Right. If that's what you force your way into, if that's the situation that you set up for yourself, and again, you allowed yourself to get recruited there. Why do you think Jamal Adams wanted you there? Because he knows they need talent. He knows it's a mess. Le'Veon Bell is a grown man who by now should know the lay of the league. And if he signs up for a stint with the Jets, I mean, you hope it works out, but ultimately you deserve whatever you get. He's got no reason to be salty whatsoever. These guys didn't, you know, they didn't exchange friendship bracelets or stuff like that. These guys are going to be able to come and go. You know who, by the way, is going to probably want to leave the Jets sometime soon? Le'Veon Bell. He'll probably look for some opportunity to get out of there as well, too. So absolutely no sympathy whatsoever. We got time for one more? We got time for another?
Come on, one more. Make it fast. Make it fast. Make it fast.
Okay. Quickly. On this day.
That's not fast.
This day, 80 years ago, Bugs Bunny makes his debut. Wild hair. Bugs Bunny is an iconic cartoon. Take it or shake it. Bugs Bunny, the greatest cartoon character ever.
Ever?
Ever?
Is he the GOAT?
Man.
He's the Wabbit.
Dresses in drag.
He's the Wabbit. He's progressive, Elsie.
I'm going to say take it. I'm going to take it. But it's like taking, you know, Jay-Z. You know, you got to factor in longevity. You know, you got to factor in cultural influence. That doesn't mean that, you know, Jay-Z's the GOAT. It just means that you got to factor in everything as far as impact. So I'm going to do the same thing with Bugs. You know, I'm not sure if Bugs, from a content perspective, is the GOAT. But when you factor in everything, yeah, I'm going to give it to him.
I 100% agree. I think you can make a strong argument, a very strong argument, that Bugs Bunny is the greatest, the most influential, the most imitated cartoon character out there. Like Martin Scorsese has talked about the influence that Looney Tunes had over him as a filmmaker. You know, that's one of the all-time greats. And he said that he learned a lot from Looney Tunes. So shout out to Looney Tunes. Shout out to Bugs Bunny. I think that is absolutely the correct answer. The Lakers have a scrimmage today, their final one against the Wizards. They come off a weekend win over the Magic in Orlando. What are we looking for today? Talk about that coming up next, 710 ESPN.